Liverpool anthem from the original, That Is I Love You Baby. Got Flirt East on the way soon. Adele lined up for you Tuesday as well. It is the 26th of April, almost 20 past 11. From the Radio City News team, here's Becky.
Breaking news from the Hillsborough inquest in Warrington this afternoon. The jury have just told the court the 96 Liverpool fans who died in the disaster were unlawfully killed. That's one of the 14 questions they were asked to answer, and they've just returned their decision in the past few minutes. So to recap, the jury at the Hillsborough inquest in Warrington have said the 96 Liverpool fans were unlawfully killed. We've got all the latest news as it happens on our website, and you can listen to rolling coverage throughout the day today on Radio City Talk on 1548 AM and on digital.
Why can't we be like that? Wish we could be like mad.
You've got Capital On, it's Ant Payne with you, and we've got some breaking news this morning. Let's cross to Chris Chambers in Global's newsroom for the latest.
On FM, online, on your mobile, and on digital radio, this is Capital News.
In the last few minutes, the jury in the Fresh Hillsborough inquest has returned its conclusions. After 2 years of evidence, the six women and three men have ruled the 96 Liverpool fans who died in the disaster in 1989 were unlawfully killed. The families have been fighting for this day for 27 years. We'll bring you much more on this in the news at 12 o'clock.
Capital.
Okay. Mark, I'm going to leave it there because we have some developments now, but thank you. We'll come back to you through the morning. As I said, BBC Radio Merseyside's Phil Cooper is outside court in Warrington for us this morning. Hi, Phil. The families have taken their seats inside the court as it fills up, and we know how the next hour, 2 hours, is going to pan out because the jury are going to answer a questionnaire that they were given with 14 questions on. Just talk us through some of those questions, Phil, if you would.
Yes, Tony, it's a packed courtroom in that the coroner has just come into court and the jury are in court as well. The forewoman of the jury is going to be answering 14 questions which the jury have been asked to answer since they retired to consider their verdicts on the 6th of April earlier this month. Now, they cover the basic facts of the disaster. They cover things like the police planning for the match, some of the decisions that senior officers took on that day, the 15th of April 1989, the behaviour of the fans as well, and whether any of those factors contributed to the dangerous situation which developed or the disaster itself. Question six will obviously be the key moment this morning when the jury returns these verdicts, and that is, are you sure so as to be satisfied that the people who died at the Hillsborough disaster were unlawfully killed?
Question six, you mentioned there, as you say, very, very important. It reads, are you satisfied so that you are sure that those who died in the disaster were unlawfully killed? You mentioned that there. They've been asked to answer only yes or no to this, but they had to take four separate matters into consideration, and this is where the complications start to come in, Phil, isn't it?
Yes, question six was the question that the jury were undecided on or couldn't reach an agreement on for quite some time before they indicated yesterday that they had reached a majority verdict. Now, the coroner, Sir John Goldring, when he directed the jury earlier this month, said for the unlawful killing, they had to answer yes to the following four matters. Firstly, that Chief Superintendent David Duckenfield owed a duty of care to the 96 people who died in the disaster. Second, that Chief Superintendent Duckenfield was in breach of that duty of care, and they must be sure that his actions were not those which a reasonably careful and competent match commander would have taken in 1989. Third, that Chief Superintendent Duckenfield's breach of that duty of care caused the deaths. And fourth, that the breach of Chief Superintendent Duckenfield's duty of care which caused the deaths amounted to gross negligence. Now, Chief Superintendent David Duckenfield, former Chief Superintendent David Duckenfield, gave evidence here last year over 6.5 days, and he admitted that his mistakes caused the 96 deaths, but he denied that there had been gross negligence. I should tell you, Tony, that the jury have now begun answering, the forewoman of the jury has begun answering the 14 questions. On question one, do you agree with the following statement, which which is intended to summarise the basic facts of the disaster. 96 people died as a result of the disaster at Hillsborough Stadium on the 15th of April 1989 due to crushing in the central pens of the Leppings Lane Terrace following the admission of a large number of supporters to the stadium through exit gates. The jury have answered yes to that question. Question number two was around the police planning for the semi-final match. Was there any error or omission in police planning or preparation for the semi-final match on the 15th of April 1989, which caused or contributed to the dangerous situation that developed on the day of the match? The jury was asked to answer yes or no. The forewoman of the jury has answered yes to that question. Comments from the jury. They feel there were major omissions in the 1989 operational order, the police operational order. Just hearing that families have been seen crying in court as the answer to that second question was given by the forewoman of the jury. Question number three, policing of the match and the situation at the turnstiles. The jury was asked, was there any error or omission in policing on the day of the match which caused or contributed to a dangerous situation developing at the Leppings Lane turnstiles? The jury has answered yes to that question. They say the police response to the increasing crowd at the Leppings Lane end of the ground was slow and uncoordinated. The road closure and sweep of fans exacerbated the situation, according to the jury. No filter cordons were in place at the Leppings Lane end. They were in place in 1988, of course. The jury says no contingency plans were made for the sudden arrival of a large number of fans, and attempts to close the perimeter gates were made too late. Sighs of relief have been heard in the public gallery as the answer to question three was given by the forewoman of the jury. These answers are coming in thick and fast, Tony, so I'll continue.
Please do.
Question number four, policing of the match and the crush on the terrace. Was there any error or omission by commanding officers which caused or contributed to the crush on the terrace? The forewoman of the jury has answered yes to that question. They say commanding officers should have ordered the closing of the central tunnel leading to the central pens on the Leppings Lane terrace. There have been audible sighs of yes as this answer was given in court. To question number five, the opening of the gates. When the order was given to open the exit gates at the Leppings Lane end of the stadium, was there any error or omission by the commanding officers in the control box which caused or contributed to the crush on the terrace? Yes or no? The jury has answered yes to that question. They say commanding officers did not inform officers in the inner concourse prior to the opening of Gate C. They say commanding officers failed to consider where fans would go, and commanding officers failed to order the closure of the central tunnel prior to the opening of Gate C. Question number six is the determination on unlawful killing. Question number six reads as follows. Are you satisfied so that you are sure that those who died in the disaster were unlawfully killed? The jury has said yes, they were unlawfully killed. This is a huge, huge moment for the families, Tony. It's been 27 years in the waiting. They've fought for so long to get the original inquest verdicts of accidental death quashed. And now, 27 years after the Hillsborough disaster, 2 years after the longest-running inquests in British legal history, a jury has said that the 96 Liverpool fans who died at Hillsborough were unlawfully killed. There have been loud cheers in court. There has been clapping from the families in court as well, families hugging each other. Just hearing that this was a majority verdict ruling on the question of unlawful killing, and it was a majority of 7-2. We're also hearing that there's crying in the public gallery as this answer to this question number six was delivered by the forewoman of the jury, and families punching the air. As I say, a huge, huge moment for the families. It's been more than a quarter of a century in their campaign to get these inquests opened. And now, 27 years after the disaster, a jury has ruled that the fans who died at Hillsborough were unlawfully killed. To question number seven, the behaviour of the supporters. Was there any behaviour on the part of the football supporters which caused or contributed to the dangerous situation at the Leppings Lane turnstiles? Yes or no? The jury has said no to that question. Was there any behaviour on the part of the football supporters which may have caused or contributed to the dangerous situation at the Leppings Lane turnstiles? Yes or no? The jury has answered no to that question as well. The supporters once again vindicated. An absolutely huge moment again. Another cheer in the public gallery as well, and audible sighs of relief from inside the courtroom. The jury has decided, the jury has ruled that the 96 Liverpool fans who died at Hillsborough were unlawfully killed. And the jury has also ruled that the behaviour of the Liverpool supporters did not cause any dangerous situation at the Leppings Lane turnstiles.
Phil, we'll let you take a little break there. Thank you very much indeed for delivering those conclusions there as well on those questions. There are 14 questions, of course. We've gone through seven, two of the major ones there, six and seven. We'll start with question six, if we may, and we'll discuss this with Mark Thomas. Mark, this was the question that was a real sticking point, and this, we understand, was one of the reasons why there was a delay in delivering these verdicts, these conclusions as well. This is this was the big question, wasn't it, with Mr. Duckinfield?
It was the sort of central decision of the entire proceedings, and this just feels like the most extraordinary victory. Every prayer of those 96 families has been answered by that verdict, and that determination, I think we're supposed to call it in law. Obviously there's a process still to be done, but that is a moment that is historic, I would say, and fully vindicates once again those years of struggle and the detailed and hugely expensive but very painstaking legal process that's gone through this hearing over the last two and a bit years.
And the question, of course, there was a lot to take in from Phil there, of course, as that news was breaking, but the question six was, are you satisfied? This was the question to the jury. Are you satisfied that you are sure that those who died in the disaster were unlawfully killed? And the answer to that was yes.
Yeah.
The next question that came along was all about the fans on the day, and this has been talked about for many, many years, behaviours of the supporters. Was there any behaviour on the part of football supporters which caused or contributed to the dangerous situation at the Leppings Lane turnstiles? If yes, was that behaviour unusual or unforeseeable? The answer to that was no. And as Phil described, people in court punch in the air, and there were shouts of yes, and as you would expect. Again, this was an extremely important question for families and for supporters, and to get to the truth of this matter.
Absolutely. We have to remember, this is an independent jury with no axe to grind. They're not people from Merseyside. For years and years, this city has had to fight the innuendo, the rumour, the suggestions that fans were in some way culpable in this. Well, this gives the lie to that once and for all. Absolutely, categorically, was there any behaviour which caused or contributed to the dangerous situation at Leppings Lane turnstiles from the football supporters? No. And then the subsidiary question as well, any behaviour which may have caused or contributed to the dangerous situation at the Leppings Lane turnstiles, equally unequivocal, no. Mm. That is huge, and gives the lie to all the nonsense that's been talked over the years.
There are other questions to be answered as well, which will come through the programme too. The state of the ground, the engineers on the ground, how the ambulance service responded as well. But this has been such a journey, such an emotional journey for a vast portion of these people's lives, for almost 30 years to try and take in and to try and get the truth and to get justice for those who died on that day.
Yeah, I mean, we're hearing you know, via Ben inside the court, that families are hugging each other. There's been shouts of hallelujah, applause, crying in the public gallery. You can hardly imagine what it must mean to them at this moment. It's everything that they've fought for vindicated. And although there is still a process to go, there are further investigations to be concluded, this is such an enormous moment, and surely those investigations from now on and the decisions from the Crown Prosecution Service and everyone else must take into account the findings of this jury.
We're also hearing there's loud cheers and clapping at St. George's Hall on the plateau there, which has been deemed an area of, not celebration, of course, an area of reflection, if you like, but there are 60-plus people, there are more and more people turning up there all the time who are watching the verdicts on a big screen, the conclusions on a big screen there. We'll cross to Phil Cooper very, very shortly. But just to run through just some of those questions that have come in over the past 10, 15 minutes. Question one, do you agree with the following statement, which is intended to summarise the basic facts of the disaster, that on the 15th of April 1989, 96 people died? The answer to that was yes. Question two has come in as yes as well. Police planning for the semi-final match. Was there any error or omission in police planning or preparation for the semi-final which caused or contributed to the dangerous situation that developed on the day of that match? Again, that question came in as yes as well. But we'll run through, Mark, for now, we will run through some more of these questions and these answers as well, just to keep you across it, because there is a lot of information coming in at the moment. I think we can cross to Phil McCann, who's at St. George's Hall for us. We understand there's been loud cheers and clapping at St. George's Hall from the people who were there. Phil, it's being relayed on the big screen.
That's right, Tony, yes, just in front of the hall. It was the answer, of course, to question six, that verdict on unlawful killing that caused people to do fist pumps into the air, some hugging each other, and children in prams as well, and many others just clapping. And then there were similar scenes when some of the other answers were read out. So there has been an atmosphere here of celebrations, probably the wrong word, but at least relief, of course, after all of this time, that these verdicts have now at least come in. And it's a mixed atmosphere too, because just in front of the hall, on the steps leading up to the main entrance, there are 96 red candles in lanterns, and then strung from the columns are white banners with the names of the 96 on them. There are around 60 people, just passers-by, some with shopping bags in front of the hall. Inside, there are more, though, in the concert room on the second floor. Pretty ornate surroundings, but it's more or less a repeat of the, it's an extension rather, of the court in Warrington. It's being presided over by a court officer, and again live proceedings from inside the court itself are being relayed there, with seats that have been set aside for the families. So this very much the focal point for today's proceedings in Liverpool, and quite a strange mixed atmosphere.
Phil, for now, thank you.
Live from the Hillsborough Inquests, BBC Radio Merseyside.
Well, let's go a few junctions up the M62 and talk to Phil Cooper, who's outside court in Warrington. Phil, I think we got up to question number seven, which was no. Just fill us in with what came in after we heard that news about Mr. Duckenfield and also about the fans as well.
Yes, absolutely, Tony. That question number seven was around the behaviour of the supporters, and the jury found that the behaviour of the supporters didn't contribute to the dangerous situation which developed outside the Leppings Lane turnstiles. Just some more information reaching us from court. David Duckenfield's lawyer can be seen carefully noting the jury's conclusions. He's propping up his head with one hand. And David Duckenfield, of course, the question around unlawful killing, question six, really amounted to the decisions that he took on that day as match commander at Hillsborough. And the jury, in order to reach that unlawful killing verdict, had to find that David Duckenfield had behaved in acted in a gross negligent way in terms of his breach of the duty of care that he had. We've had several other questions about the stadium and about some of the safety procedures that were in place at the ground. But I'll just take you forward to question number 13 about the emergency response and the role of South Yorkshire Police. In fact, I'm just seeing that some of the families are are coming out of court at the moment, Tony. I'm not sure if any of them are going to speak. I'll just take you through question 13.
Sure.
After the crush in the West Terrace had begun to develop, was there any error or omission by the police which caused or contributed to the loss of lives in the disaster? The jury has answered yes to that question. They say the police delayed making it a major incident, so appropriate emergency response was delayed. Finally, question 14, the role of the South Yorkshire Metropolitan Ambulance Service. After the crush in the West Terrace had begun to develop, was there any error or omission by the ambulance service which caused or contributed to the loss of lives in the disaster? The jury has answered yes to that question. They say the ambulance service failed to ascertain the nature of the problem at the Leppings Lane end, and the failure to recognise and call a major incident led to delays in the response to the emergency. The court has now adjourned. They will resume at 10 to 12. There has been applauding in the public gallery of the jury as the jury left the court. And as I say, some of the families, I think, have just started leaving the court building. I can hear applause on the other side, just towards the court building here. And I think one or two of them, maybe one or two of the legal teams, will be making some sort of statements in the next few moments.
Phil, in the run-up to the conclusions on the questions, you know, we heard a lot of emotional audio. We heard Jenny Hicks talking about, you know, her journey as well, and we heard some of the members of Lisa Wafer, for example, Colin Wafer's sister, then just talking about how emotionally draining it's been. And while you were talking there, we could hear claps, we could hear cheers in the background. Is there a sense of a huge weight that's been lifted from the families at the moment? Because that certainly came over when we were listening to you there.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, Margaret Aspinall and Trevor Hicks, I'm just hearing they were in the courtroom and they were seen hugging each other and in tears, families shaking each other's hands and hugging as well. Somebody said, it's just a relief, isn't it? And another said, finally, our day in court. Also heard somebody say, God bless the jury. Donna Miller, who lost her brother, I think, was in court there as well. There were survivors here today as well, and one of them with a huge banner which said, we climbed the hill in our own way, and then 96 at the bottom of that banner. As you say, I think just a huge relief that these verdicts have finally been delivered. This is exactly what these families have been campaigning for the past 27 years. When you think that the original inquests ruled that the 96 died accidentally, the families never gave up. They never accepted those verdicts. They were finally quashed in 2012. And today, finally, the correct verdicts have been delivered.
Phil, for now, thank you. We'll let you catch a little bit of breath because a lot of information coming in through the morning as well. This is BBC Radio Merseyside. We're going to be on air, as you would imagine, as you would expect, for most of the day, just reflecting those conclusions, those verdicts, if you like, here on BBC Radio Merseyside.
Live from the Hillsborough Inquests, BBC Radio Merseyside.
Mark Thomas, former editor at the Daily Post there, you were a young reporter at the time, and we've already established, you know, how the city felt. And it wasn't just the city, was it? It was almost a collective sense of grief throughout the UK. And it did go beyond that, you know, when we go on holiday now. If you talk to people, if you say, where are you from? From Liverpool. They will bring up the Beatles, they will bring up Hillsborough, they will bring up football. And it touched many, many people, not just the people from this city.
It did. And, I mean, I was starting to mention before when the dramatic news started to come through that the day after the disaster, I remember being there early in the morning at Anfield and seeing some of the floral tributes being brought by people. And Peter Robinson, who then had the title of club secretary at Liverpool Football Club, a famous figure in the club's history, just came out and saw these people and said, oh, please, you must come in, and had ordered the gates thrown open, and people started wandering in. And that was the moment that led to that extraordinary scene that I think no one will ever forget of the Anfield pitch, which gradually over the days that followed filled with flowers as people from all around this country and all around the world came to pay their respects and to share in this collective moment. Because it was a moment that I think injured the whole football family and everybody who cares about football, whatever their particular allegiance is, you know, there but for the grace of God went any of us, and we all I'm sure who are old enough remember how football fans were treated in those days.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was almost a subconscious thing that people made their way to Anfield. I mean, I lived by the ground at the time, just off Priory Road. My mum still lives pretty much where she lived then. And you're right in what you say. It was almost a numbness the next day. And it was, again, it was another sunny day and the sun was shining, but there was a numbness right the way throughout the city, and it was almost a subconscious walk to the ground where people would just gravitate towards Anfield, and that's exactly what happened. They brought floral tributes over the next days and weeks, where you couldn't see the goal mouth at first, but then by the end of the first week you pretty much couldn't see the pitch, and that's then flowers were laid onto the Kop end as well. It was an extraordinary time, wasn't it?
It was, and I think that it summed up, that was the immediate reaction, but it's never really gone away. People remember obviously images like that and the awful images that we also saw from Sheffield, but it touched people in way. I think, you know, the shock of 96 ordinary football fans, innocent people, lest we forget that is the verdict today in case there's any doubt about it, innocent people who had no part in causing the tragedy, who turned up to enjoy a game of football, a big important occasion, and didn't come home. And that, you know, that has, I think, had repercussions that have continued to this day in terms of the emotions of the football family.
Indeed. It's BBC Radio Merseyside. It's just turned 11:30. We're reflecting the events from Warrington this morning, where those conclusions, determinations, verdicts, they have been brought to us by the jury this morning. Just, if you've only just joined us, let's just go through. There were 14 questions that the jury had to consider. They're all important questions, of course, but question number 6 was incredibly important to the families and the survivors as well. Question number 6 to the jury: are you satisfied that you are sure that those who died in the disaster were unlawfully killed? And the answer came through as yes. That was a big, big deal for the families, wasn't it? Because they've been fighting for this for so many years. When they knew what the truth was, and they've had so many things put in their way, there's been so many hurdles for them to get over, you can understand them punching the air in the corner.
You can, and it was the most difficult question for the jury, and you can well understand why it was the only question on which there wasn't a totally unanimous verdict. The background to this one was that there were 4 different hurdles that the jury had to jump over, if you like, in order to come up with that conclusion, and if any one of those hurdles on the route they hadn't agreed with, they wouldn't have got to that conclusion. So they have been absolutely sure that, in their view, David Duckenfield failed in his duty in a way that was criminally negligent, and that is a big call from a jury. Now, obviously, that's not the same thing as a criminal conviction, and there's a whole new process to go on in terms of the continuing police and Independent Police Complaints Commission investigations, and we will find out in a few months' time what the findings of those investigations are. But, you know, you have to say that this, in terms of that long, long journey, this is a huge moment. It's hard to understate how big it is.
And they never gave up, did they? The families never gave up. They carried on with this because they knew the truth. They firmly believed, you know, those who were there on the day, the accounts of those who were there on the day, the supporters on the day, for example, which brings me onto question 7. Behaviour of the supporters. Was there any behaviour on part of football supporters which caused or contributed to the dangerous situation at the Leppings Lane turnstiles? If yes, was that behaviour unusual or unforeseeable? No. A firm no. That answer came back. And again, there were cries of, well, relief. There were tears of joy. And tears of vindication, really. You know, that we knew the truth all along, and this is what's come out now.
Exactly. And one hesitates to bring them up, but you have to remember in this context the damage that the Sun did to the reputation of those supporters with that front page of the truth, which was the biggest tissue of lies that has ever been perpetrated by a national newspaper, probably. And it was in the light of that and the sort of continued sort of innuendo and the sort of chattering classes nonsense that would sort of sustain in terms of people saying, well, obviously they had to have some part of it, obviously they were drunk, obviously they were misbehaving and all that. Well, no, you know, that, you know,
it simply was not the case. It didn't happen.
Yeah, it did not have any influence, and that is the conclusion after hearing an awful lot of very detailed evidence, including seeing video footage from inside and outside the stadium. No, the fans did nothing that contributed to the tragedy.
Okay, Mark Fennell, thank you very much indeed. 25 minutes before midday, this is BBC Radio Merseyside. Good morning.
Live from the Hillsborough Inquests, BBC Radio Merseyside.
Well, let's go to a gentleman who has covered virtually every day. In fact, he's been there every day for 2 years. Ben Schofield is in Warrington for us this morning. Ben, we've heard some dramatic audio this morning. You've studied this case. You've been through the whole procedure with a fine-tooth comb as well. It's been a really dramatic morning, hasn't it?
Well, I've never seen anything like it in my career in a courtroom. When the unlawful killing conclusion was given by the foreman of the jury, there were loud applauses, clapping, cheers, families punched the air, they said yes. And then after a space of the remaining questions, the jury was sent out for a break. We're on that break right now. And it was as the jury had left their seats and were leaving the courtroom, one sister, Donna Miller, who lost her brother Paul Carlisle, suddenly shouted, "God bless the jury," and there was an eruption of applause from the public gallery. People say things like, no dry eye in the house, but really, looking around, there was just people in floods of tears all around me. I saw Andy Burnham in tears, wiping tears from his face. I saw Trevor Hicks and Margaret Aspinall, two of the best-known campaigners among the Hillsborough Family Support Group. I saw them hugging each other in tears. I went over and spoke to Trevor. He really didn't say anything to me. He just shook my hand. Margaret repeated that phrase, "God bless the jury." I've overheard conversations in that courtroom, a barrister for the families with tears in his eyes saying it is beyond belief, the conclusions as they were read out. He said that, well, I said it sounds like they understood the evidence, that they got it. And he said, well, yes, but also you can see that they answered a possibly question as opposed to a probably question, which shows how much care they were putting into coming up with and formulating these responses. This was 11 days of deliberations that went into these conclusions. This wasn't something that they just sort of cooked up overnight, but that phrase from the barrister, sure. It is beyond belief.
Ben, you mentioned Andy Burnham there, and I know that there will be no more trips to Anfield in April now, you know, to reflect on the Hillsborough disaster. The last one was a couple of weeks ago, but there was a significant moment at Anfield with Andy Burnham. A lot of people will know about, but for those who don't, just explain what happened with Mr. Burnham that day.
Yes, this was in 2009. A larger than usual turnout at the memorial service at Anfield that year. There were tens of thousands of people who decided to come when in previous years maybe they hadn't decided to turn out. And they included bereaved families, survivors, and of course the usual support that the city throws behind the Hillsborough families. So tens of thousands of people in Anfield. The COP was, of course, full, as it is every year, and Andy Burnham got up to address the COP. The microphone stand, a lonely place, as you look up the seats, rows upon rows of them. He was the first politician to speak to the memorial service. He was invited there by Margaret Aspinall, and Trevor Hicks always says, he had said, "Oh, over my dead body," but he was on holiday when that decision was taken, and it really was taken out of his hands. And Andy Burnham started his address to the COP, and he said, "Look, I've got a message here from the Prime Minister," and he went on through some prepared notes, and then a lone voice from the crowd shouted out, "Justice." And that was when the rest of the crowd picked up that cue and started chanting, "Justice for the 96. It's a phrase that we've heard over the past 27 years as the Hillsborough families have campaigned for their day in court. And today, I guess, with that phrase ringing in Andy Burnham's ears, you could say that maybe for some people among the Hillsborough families that justice has been served. Finally, after 27 years.
Ben, the impact, we know about the 14 questions, but the impact of question number 6 and question number 7 as well, particularly question number 6, has been immense, hasn't it?
There's nothing in my ears and...
I think we may have lost Ben. We'll just see if we can bring Ben back there just a second. Ben Schofield, as I mentioned earlier on, has been at court for the last 2 years since the inquest began, and we'll see if we can go to Ben and just talk to him about that impact. I tell you what, we'll try and get Ben back up, because there's a lot of media there at the moment, there's a lot of cables and there's a lot going on, as you would imagine, not just to be broadcast in this city, but as we touched on before, Mark Thomas, you know, this will have ripples and ramifications throughout the rest of the country, and there will be a lot of smiling faces, a lot of happy faces, but for the right reasons, in the right way, won't there?
Absolutely, and you can't forget the awful truth that, you know, nothing that's been decided today can ever bring those people, their loved ones, back. So it always has to be set in that context, I think. But in as far as is this the best they could possibly have wished for as an outcome to this 2-year journey, yes, I think it is. And I think, you know, the barrister there saying beyond belief, well, no, I don't agree with that, because I do.
Okay, so I'll just stop you there, because we can go live to the court building now. Spontaneous version of You'll Never Walk Alone has broken out here. It's actually Justice for the 96. I think they were singing You'll Never Walk Alone earlier on, but Justice for the 96 is broken out. Let me just leave that on for a second. Yeah, they've just moved away there. We can I think we can see some of the family members holding up pictures as well of their loved ones. So a spontaneous reaction, of course, and a huge sense of relief as well.
There will be an enormous amount of relief in that. You know, it's a cathartic moment, isn't it? There will just be all that built up tension over those 2 years and leading up to today. How, I think it was Jenny there saying that she'd managed to sleep last night for the first time in a couple of years, but bless her, the relief she must be feeling today must be extraordinary, and the same will go for every one of them. It's been some journey for them all.
Indeed, and just moving on, because I know people will be joining us all the time, you know, people are doing different things today, but if you have just joined us, we are reflecting the situation and the conclusions from court involving the Hillsborough inquests. Let's move on to question 7 again, because the behaviour of the supporters, there's been a lot of talk and a lot of speculation and a lot of lies about what happened on that day. Supporters arrived without tickets. It wasn't true. Supporters were drunk. It wasn't true. And this has all come out now, Mark, hasn't it?
Yes, indeed. And I think, you know, the fundamental thing is there was scientific evidence to prove. They had an expert who counted the number of people who were inside the ground by looking at all the images and everything.
Yeah.
And there weren't more people in there than were ticketed for. So even if some of them had got in without tickets, that doesn't matter. The number of people that were ticketed for were in the ground. They were just forced into the wrong places, and that's what went wrong. That's not the fault of any of the fans.
And alcohol, tins, empty tins, bottles, cans, alcohol was looked for after the disaster as well, and they simply, one or two, but they simply couldn't find the amounts that were being alluded to.
You know,
again, it just didn't happen.
It just didn't happen. People were have had a drink before the match. I was at the Everton semi-final on Saturday, and I'd had half a bottle of wine and a couple of beers before I went to the game. But I, you know, that doesn't mean you're out of control and acting like a lunatic. And I was actually thinking, going to that semi-final, what a journey football has been on since this disaster, and how you're treated today with respect and courtesy, and you are sort of led in a very controlled manner through all the process of a huge crowd getting into a stadium, and then you sit in comfortable seats and watch it in a civilised way.
Mark, thank you. We'll come back to you shortly. Ben, we lost your line earlier on, but we did just pick up a spontaneous outburst of Justice for the 96, I think we heard in the background.
Yes, you would have heard that. The crowd of families came out of court just as the coroner sent the jury away for a short break, and before that chorus of Justice for the 96, they had sung a rendition of You'll Never Walk Alone, of course an anthem that has kept the Hillsborough families going through their campaign, and have to say, it was quite a task coming out of court after the jury had been sent away. It was packed in the corridor and the public areas of courtroom one here in Birchwood Park. You could see tears streaming down people's faces. Families were stopping and hugging each other. Lawyers were stopping and congratulating the families on their campaign. It really was an emotional scene. It's difficult to put it into words, I have to say, because this is so unprecedented. This, I have to say, isn't what everybody expected. I was talking to one mum who lost her son as we were walking out of the courtroom, and she said she never had a doubt that today's conclusions would be so favourable to the families and support their narrative, their version of what happened 27 years ago. She had faith where others perhaps didn't.
Ben, my guest in the studio is Mark Thomas. We've already discussed about question number six and question number seven and the huge impact. But let's just leap ahead to question number 13 as well. Emergency response and the role of South Yorkshire Police after the crush in the West Terrace had begun to develop. Was there any error or omission by the police which caused or contributed to the loss of lives in the disaster? Now, this was an extremely important question for the obvious reasons, and that came back yes, didn't it?
It did come back yes, and I witnessed some families quietly punching the air as that answer was given in court. And let's not forget that at the previous inquest there was a cut-off point on the evidence at 3:15 p.m. That meant the emergency response really wasn't looked into in the kind of detail that the families had hoped. And also, at 3:15 on the day of the disaster, we know now that the chief superintendent in charge on the day, David Duckenfield, was talking to a contingent of officials, two members of the Football Association and then the club secretary of Sheffield Wednesday. And he was telling those men that fans had forced their way into the ground. He wasn't telling them that he had given the order to open exit gate C. That is something that David Duckenfield has admitted was a lie of omission during his testimony in court. And we know now that the jury thinks that instead of lying about what had happened on the day, what should have been happening was a major incident should have been called and the appropriate response given to the terrible tragedy that was unfolding outside of the police control box on the pitch.
You've been very, very close to this case, Ben. I remember you walking into the office just over 2 years or so ago, and we knew you were going to be stationed there, pretty much living in Birchwood for 2 years. It's been an extraordinary case, and I was talking to Mark before that the families never, ever gave up. You know, when they knew that they were right, they knew the truth, they knew what had gone on, fans were at the game, And family members as well. They knew, they never gave up. And this is their day, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, yeah. That's the remarkable thing about the Hillsborough families and the Hillsborough story, that in spite of incredible hardship, unimaginable grief, and an establishment that really wouldn't listen for 20 years, they carried on going, they carried on fighting.